This is Phil Lamar, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
So I have my mic on all the time.
That's a good outtake. Muke. It's a microphone puke.
Or it's a microphone that records no sound.
So swears Skeletor.
Hello and welcome to Geekcast Radio. This is Geekcast Radio Presents. This is an all-new interview with myself, TFG, and Mike. We just wrapped up the Top 100 Geekcast Radio, Top 100 Fictional Villain Character Countdown. It's our fourth, fifth, or sixth countdown, and go back and listen to that, folks. Lots and lots of villain countdowns, and from villains from all kinds of places. Probably the most interesting countdown we've done, because there's plenty of literary characters in there, not just comedy or fiction, or, well, it is all fictional, but it's not just like movies, TV, and all that. Today I'm presenting a special interview to talk about the Goblins animated series that is hopefully going to get funded to get made. With me, I have, for the first time in 5 years, the illustrious Mr. Phil Lamar.
Hi, Mike. How are you? Illustrious. I like that. That makes it sound like I'm wearing fur.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. Well, yeah, that's so not what I was going for, but okay. We have Mr. Terrell Hunt. Hello, sir.
Hi. I am wearing very little fur.
He's wearing very little.
That's what she said. All right. Also, Miss Danielle Stevens. Hello, Danielle.
Hello.
And Mr. Matt King, the renegade of G.I. Joe himself.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly right. For everybody that's listening to this, you should not need any introduction to Phil Lamar. Since I've talked to several friends, my fiance and other people about doing this interview, they're like, "You interviewed the guy from Mad TV twice?" And I'm like, "Yeah." They're like, "Oh, you're pretty famous then, aren't you, Mike?" I'm like, "No." Nah, I'm just a guy. So yeah, it's been a while since Phil and I had a chat. Very awesome to have you back. And
you're still on the internet. The internet hasn't fired us.
I know, right?
The internet can do that?
Oh yeah.
With Donald Trump in charge, anything can happen.
Anything.
We're shutting it down. We're shutting down all of the bad internet. Stop.
We're safe up here in Canada.
All those exactly. Biggie jobs just going away.
Wow. Oh boy. Yay, this is turning into the Donald Trump interview. Wow. Okay.
We made it farther, longer than I thought we would.
All right. So Goblins Animated is a new project. Terrell or Matt or Danielle, who wants to go first? And or Phil, who wants to go first in telling everybody how this came about and what the idea is behind it?
Well, why don't we start off with Terrell, with the inception of the whole thing.
Oh, okay. It's based off of my webcomic that I've been doing for like 13 years. That's pretty much it.
Mike, have you gotten a chance to see the comic?
I have not seen the comic.
Tell them about it, Terrell.
Yeah, that's why I was like, yeah, tell us about it so we know, so that way we know when we talk about the animated series what it's going to be like. I've seen the video for the animated series on the donation page, but I haven't actually seen the comic itself.
Basically, it's a D&D type world. It's a fantasy RPG kind of world where the physics of that world follow the game mechanics. There's hit points, you go up levels and stuff. The characters are aware of going up levels and things. It showcases the, you know, like sort of, I don't want to say parodies D&D type games, but it references them. Yeah. It's from the point of view of the monsters, of the little guys. You make a first level character, and you want to become super powerful and fight dragons and deities and save the world. But when you start out, you gotta, beat up the little teeny guys, the goblins or the little were bunnies or whatever, you know, kill three mosquitoes and I'll give you these crappy boots, you know, that sort of a deal. And this is sort of a story of those little guys, how they're not the epic enemies that get respect, like massive dragons that you know, live in a mountain. And they're certainly not the adventurers. They're just the little guys that get kicked around. And so it's sort of them fighting back, sort of them sort of breaking the rules and standing up against us.
So they fall somewhere between Han Solo and Granamir.
Granamir?
Granamir was the dragon in He-Man and the Masters of the Universe from the 80s.
Yeah, I don't think they get as grand as Han Solo.
Hang on a second. I was a huge He-Man fan in the 80s. Granamir?
Yeah, it's the giant red dragon. The old dragon.
There was a red dragon in He-Man?
I'll send you pictures of it afterwards. I'll send you video later. Yeah.
Yes. I'm so disappointed. I had all the toys. Apparently not all of them.
Apparently yeah. not. Like, how do you miss out on Granamir? Yeah, everybody knows that one.
Jeez. He's the one with the helmet.
Yeah.
He's the one with the helmet who sat in it. He looked like he was always taking a dump on the most gigantic toilet.
Mm-hmm. They all kind of look like that in He-Man.
Yeah. He was more in She-Ra than he was in He-Man. But anyway.
No, actually, he wasn't. He wasn't more in She-Ra, no. I've spent the last 5.5 years reviewing every episode of Filmation He-Man and She-Ra. I have no life.
I'm so sorry.
I have no life. So, yeah, no, he was not in She-Ra hardly at all. He was in, like, 6 or 7 of the 130 episodes of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
There we are. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's deep.
Dude, anyway, you had to watch all that? I mean, wow.
Yeah.
So he's not as glorious as Granamir, nor as Han Solo. He's more like
like somewhere between Granamir and a porg.
Yeah,
Danielle just pulled up a picture of him. I've never seen this guy.
Seriously?
This is blowing my mind.
Well, you guys realize that someone who describes themselves as an avid watcher of a television show, on average, has seen 1 out of every 4 episodes.
Right.
It's like we all think that we've seen everything, and with the exception of Mike, we haven't.
Right, exactly.
Mike is the only person who's actually
seen all of it.
The sad thing is, you know, Phil, you say, oh, I'm sorry. I feel sorry for you for doing all the Filmation stuff. I'm currently doing the New Adventures cartoon from the 90s. That's even worse. Anyway.
Anyway. Yes. Go down that road. But goblins, you know, will not be as bad as Filmation. Or, like, in terms of animation, like, that's why we're you know, Kickstartering, you know, is, I mean, why we're doing this crowdfunding campaign is so that we don't have it look like that.
Exactly. You don't want the scrolling background that goes on for 4 hours of the same 4 trees.
And we know that talent-wise, it's not going to be Lou Scheimer doing all 19 voices.
Exactly.
Because we've got an amazing cast. Did you get a chance to see?
Oh, Lou's? Yes. Yeah. So, folks, you need to fund this, not just to help the creators here, but just for the simple cast. It's not, I don't mean simple in like simple, but just, oh my God, Billy West, Jennifer Hale, Jim Cummings, Matthew Mercer, Maurice LaMarche, Steve Bloom, and Tara Strong, along with Phil LaMarr and Matt King.
Yep. And now we're bringing in Chloe Dykstra as well.
Oh, yeah, wow.
We just announced Chloe today.
Yep. So, we got a lot of hitters on the team, and we know.
And more to come.
And we know that we can come in and really sort of lay down goblins in front of people and present something that's quite amazing. I mean, the thing is, Terrell's Canadian, so he will never, like, just be proud of this thing because he's too humble. But goblins, I mean, it set me on fire 10 years ago. I had a podcast called Geeks On, and my friend Peter was a co-host with me on it. We would cover all sorts of geek stuff. And he said, you got to read this comic called Goblins. And so I picked it up, and it blew me away because it takes on these amazing tropes that we just take for granted in fantasy and science fiction. And it takes it on in this wonderful lampooning way that that I just absolutely fell in love with and have wanted just to sort of virally connect other people to it. Because, I mean, when you have these simple goblins in the center of the village going, you know, okay, the humans are coming and they're going to kill us again. Can we do something about it this time? Do we? I mean, you know, we have a poorly locked chest in the center of the village, right? Yeah, I mean, there are magic weapons in it. Can we use them? Could we just take them out and use them? And no, it's not. It's tradition.
It isn't. It's not done.
And just that one thing. When I read that in the comic, it blew me away because I was like, yeah, we do take these sort of tropes for granted because they fit the game. They fit mm-hmm. that game that we all played. But what did it mean to those monsters on the ground? Because they are always getting raised, and there's no personality to them. So how did they feel about it? And Terrell goes so in-depth week to week. And the fantastic thing for anybody who hasn't read Goblin comic, and I'm going to blow more smoke at Terrell, is that you watch this guy who just had a dream like 13 years ago, and everybody who's working a crappy office job and who really wants to do something beautifully creative should look at Terrell's work, because here's this guy who had a dream and he goes out and he just decides to do it. And that just alone is something that is so rare and should be treasured. But he goes out and does it, and he starts drawing this comic, and you can see Terrell evolve as an artist over 13 years of this comic, to where he's a talented amateur when he starts, to now the work that Terrell's consistently putting out week to week, that Danielle and he are doing, and that Cheyenne Wright is inking, is truly, I think, one of the best web comics on the net. And he's just bringing storyline after storyline after storyline. And when you see something like, you know, I'm not going to name names, but when you see these things, these movies that come out that cost millions and millions of dollars, and they look beautiful, but that, you know, the story is just lacking. When you have something
that Star Trek,
sure. When you have something that has this good of a story, you wanna get the best people involved, and you wanna get the best animation behind it to really just have people see it do what it can do, and that's what we're trying to do at its heart.
Well, absolutely. It's funny that, I mean, like, we were talking about the, you know, He-Man cartoon from the 80s, and it's kind of like I was raised on that stuff, like in the 80s, G.I. Joe, Transformers, He-Man, those very formulaic half hour, five times a week episodes, and I remember, you know, I used to watch them and be really into them because I was too young to realize that there was this formula. They were there to sell toys, and as I got older, I started to realize, hang on a second, like, using the Transformers as an example, I've been watching this for years, and here are the Autobots and Decepticons, two, like, races of robots specifically designed to kill other robots. Like, they have, like, cannons for arms, and they shoot nuclear weapons out of their butts or whatever that, like, whatever that robot does, and they fight each other for half an hour a day, like, for five times a week. And they've been doing this for like 8 seasons or whatever. Not a single one has ever killed another. Like, you'd think Megatron would stop and go, hey, hang on a second. We've been doing this for years. Has any of us ever killed an Autobot? Any of us? No? Have they ever killed one of us? No, they never have. We're really, really bad at this. And like, the same thing, like, with He-Man, you got characters. I've got a sword. And I'm like, disintegrate mountains, and like G.I. Joe, we're shooting lasers, and like, and nobody, nothing ever happens. This, when, what, as soon as you get old enough to realize the story doesn't progress, it's not a story, it's kind of depressing. And so that, I think that's one of the big things that inspired me. Like, it's, I think Goblins, it taps into that old school feel of like Dungeons and Dragons, those old kind of like cartoons, except, you know, things like, there's consequences, you know, people die, arms are chopped off, and, you know, right. Like, I have a personal rule that every time there's a fight in the story, something changes forever. It could be like something as serious as a main character dying, it could be something as like small as a, you know, a piece of clothing is ripped or armor is damaged or there's a scar on a character or something. But like there will never be a fight where like everything is exactly the same as it was before the fight happened, because yeah.
Absolutely, and I agree with that, except the only thing I hope you never do is you impersonate a certain person that sold his soul to Disney, because he always cuts the hands off of everybody. Yeah, no. Just don't start doing that, and that's cool. Yeah, technically, all of those shows were for selling toys, but there are several episodes of any of them that you can really watch and is a real story.
Right.
From well, the 80s. Also,
but also, there's, I mean, as somebody who's much older than all of you guys.
Sure, rub it in, rub it in.
Yeah, that's something I'm bragging about. The fact that storytelling has changed so much.
Absolutely.
In the last, you know, 25 years. I mean, think about it. Before, it was like you had to, you know, if you were a kid and you wanted to watch a cartoon, there was one period of time, one day a week, where you would get new cartoons. Yeah. Saturday morning on three channels.
Yep.
That was it.
Yep.
And then at, you know, 1 o'clock, golf would come on. And your time was done.
I remember that.
Or at noon, Saved by the Bell.
You were so lucky.
Right? So the fact that, you know, you now have access to so much more story that you can, you know, you don't have to go back to one every time, and you're not waiting 7 days for, you know, another chance to hear that story. That, you know, and it's great because, Terrell, I feel like Goblins sort of lives in both worlds. It remembers the old kind of storytelling. It remembers the old rules, but it breaks them. Yeah. You know, I mean, to well, me, what drew me.
It doesn't break them. It also, where it doesn't break them, it also points a finger at them in this great way.
Yeah, absolutely. And combining storytelling from the olden days, you know, when Phil was a young buck to now. yeah, that's a good way of doing it. It's not, you know, you don't have to have the old way or the new way. Just have something that is a story that you want to tell in the way that you want to tell it. There are no, there used to be all kinds of storytelling rules, as we've already said, may the man rest in peace, but Lou Scheimer was Lou Scheimer. And once he gave you an outline, you wrote something compared to, you know, going through that outline or whatever it is.
Right.
You know,
this is minute 14. Fall down.
No. Now that's Wally Burr. You leave Wally alone.
but honestly, Mike, what you're talking about is what drew me to this project, is having a story that really just pops, that sings to you. That's like, oh, I love reading this comic. This story needs to be, you know, given to a wider audience, especially because it's got these great, you know, graphics, these great images, these great characters, and this amazing world. You know, it's not just, you know, this one tale that we can tell. I know that there are so many tales that we can tell, and it's also unique in its in its style and its tone. And part of the reason we're crowdfunding it is we want to try to hold on to that uniqueness, to be able to create something that captures the animated version of Terrell's Goblin's world, and then show it to people. Say, like, this is what we're talking about. Like, you know, as opposed to trying to describe it, like we're doing now.
Like we're doing now, and it's difficult. You could see even with the level of geek knowledge that we have, you know, and the sort of collective experience of going, okay, remember when? It's still difficult to sort of share it, and so that's one of the reasons why it's so imperative to be able to have a visual reference point for this, to be able to go, look, here are the voices, here's what it sounds like, here's how funny it is, here's how snappy it is, and here's how really heartfelt and dark that it can get. Because that's one of the amazing things about the comic is that I mean, Phil and I, when we were looking at it, we knew immediately that if this was going to a studio pitch, that instantaneously it was getting watered down, and we didn't want that to happen.
Right, because you've got multicolored characters, they're immediately going to go, oh, 7 to 12. Like, well, not necessarily, you know.
Yeah,
I would advise against having 7-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember grounding my son for reading the comic because he was too young to read it, and I caught him. I was like both really, really, you know, proud and like, oh, he broke the rules to read my comic. But at the same time, I was like, oh my God, you're in so much trouble. But yeah, I remember talking to somebody like years ago, like we're talking like 7-8 years ago, about he was making suggestions on, from a business standpoint, changes that I need to make. And he was saying, first of all, you can't keep changing the characters. Like, you can't have them level up and get new, say, armor or weapons or anything, because that makes merchandising difficult. Like, you have to have an iconic view. This is the way that character looks, like Han Solo's vest, you know, like, this is right. The way the character looks. It makes merchandising far more profitable, far, like, much easier. And secondly, you can't do things like introduce something that doesn't have a payoff for, like, way to way, way down in the story, like, because it's got to, you know, it's got to, yeah, the structure's got to be, like, it sets up and then pays off, like, right after that. Otherwise, people aren't going to, you know, like, they aren't going to remember or stick around or be interested for that long. So, and I realized that, like, either you got to treat it like a business. I mean, like a lot of storytelling, especially something like movies or TV, it's, you know, this symbiotic relationship between the business and the creativity. You got to have both. Without a budget, you can't really make the thing the way you want. And without the creativity, it's just a bunch of numbers. So, but I think that, I mean, I remember deciding that I either have to look at this from something like that'll hopefully make me as much money as possible, or something that'll be a story that I'll be proud of, that I can look back and think, well, that's a cool story later on. And so I went the creative side. So it's structured to be the best story I could possibly tell, and not the most profitable, merchandisable, money-making thing.
Right. Oh, but we're going to change all that.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, you can have it be the most creative story and the story that speaks to you and that you want to show the audience, and still make a crap ton of money at it. You know, like, and you know, to your point about, oh, you know, we want to have payoffs to the story. We don't want to have to wait 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different books or 10 different years for a TV series to pay off crap that happened in season one. Looking at you, Game of Thrones. You know.
There is a description of the Goblins Animated that is Smurfs meets Game of Thrones, I will say.
The only thing Game of Thrones that I actually have ever really enjoyed, because I refuse to pay HBO just to see one TV show because everyone says I should, was the Sesame Street parody Game of Chairs with Grover.
Oh, that's funny.
It's hilarious.
I gotta go look that up.
Yeah, I'll send it to you after this. It's so awesome. All right, so let's talk about the characters. Terrell, where do you want to start? Which character do you want to start with? And let's go through some of their personalities and what we can expect in the animated series once it gets funded, because we know it's going to get funded. Come on.
Basically, the story starts with the group of goblins, the main group of goblins that stand up and, you know, the ones that decide to break the tropes and decide to go up levels themselves and do things like use the treasure from their, like, Porlilok treasure chest, which is normally set aside for the adventurers to collect. And I remember, like, when I first wrote, like, the first few pages as, like, an initial concept, and I had an idea of what I wanted the story to do, but I hadn't written the whole story at that point. This is, like, 15 years ago or something. And in that initial introduction to the concept of the humor and stuff, I had a bunch of characters that they were written and, like, designed to be one gag characters. They're there for a funny joke, and then that's it. Like, the one character comes in and is like, starts complaining about how stupid all our names are, and then that character's name is Complains of Names. And the other character, who's like a goblin, who's like terrified all the time of everything because his name is Dies Horribly, because he's prophesized he will one day die horribly. Like, all these little one payoff jokes. And I remember, like, I did that concept and I was thinking, okay, so now I have to design the main goblins, the ones that I'm going to take seriously. And I couldn't write these characters that were as interesting. Like, I just I was like, oh, I need to capture that. The initial characters I think are really interesting. I needed to capture that. And I eventually just decided, you know what? Let's just have these characters. So like, they all have these names that are kind of one gag situations, but I took all of the depth that I wanted to put into the main characters and I put it into them. And so, I think it accidentally paid off really, really well. So that's, yeah, that's the basic main group, but it's got the story has like a large ensemble cast. I mean, you've got the adventurers who start off as antagonists and sort of, you know, we look
the two main humans or not humans but the two main adventurers, Min-Max and Forgath, that's the characters being voiced by Billy West and Maurice LaMarche. I'm doing complaints of names myself, and
because it's a role that's fit just for you. Come on.
Well, because I complain about everything, and they say, "Okay, well, I guess we know which character Phil's playing." But it's interesting because, yeah, that just in that very first story arc, we've got two paths, and I mean that first story is about these two groups and where their paths collide. That's our first story. That, you know. Hopefully, once we get funded and get moving forward, we can, you know, flesh this out, you know, and bring it to life.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I'm playing Fumbles, who is the best character in the whole piece. And Fumbles really is the aspirational goblin. I mean, what is he? He's 1/32nd of every class. Is that what it is?
One eleventh
of every class.
He initially he's the first goblin to make himself into a player character, and he takes every cheesy, like, bad idea that players have put, and we've all done it, put into these like cheesy weird characters.
I was gonna say the book, Terrell.
That's why I like Min-Max, because I straight up do that.
Fumbles makes his character, he's different because the goblin's name is Fumbles because he always fumbles, like he rolls a one all the time, but he's made himself a player character. He's the only goblin to have done this, and he gave himself a character name, Senior Vorpal Kakaso, which I love the way you yell that, Matt, by the way. He's kind of like the little guy who pushes the story along. Like
he's the concept. It's embodied in him,
mm-hmm.
which is funny because he's so not a hero character at all.
Right.
You know, he's goofy. Yeah.
He's goofy and not, but he's the one. He's the one who sort of who gets it, and that's why, as his character has been paying off over the years, I've been so excited because it's finally like, it's like small town kid makes good.
He's goofy, know. Huh? You better be careful about Bill Farmer coming after you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if Matt hadn't been available, I would have called Bill.
Yeah, Bill.
Oh!
That's
funny.
That would be weird.
That would be weird.
But yeah, he's overextended, too ambitious with his characters. So he's multi-classed every single character, which you can't actually do in D&D, but he's done it anyway. So he's one, at level one, he's 1/11th of every character. So when he casts a sleep spell on someone, the person's just sort of like, I don't know, I guess I feel kind of lethargic because everything's watered down so much.
So wait a second, Tara. Okay, so I've always asked this question. I've always forgotten. So when he levels up, let's say he gets to level 2, right? Then he's 2/11th of everything?
Yeah. He
has to get to level 11 to be...
So he has to get to level 11 to get level 1 in
everything. Exactly. And, I mean, there are so many reasons why... Because I can hear right now the listeners like yelling at their computers... going, wait, no, you can't do that. You can't be a paladin and a rogue. And then, no, and like, you're right, you can't do that. but he does it anyways.
Exactly.
So when he gets to that level 11, when he's won in every way, will he be Uber or just level 1?
Oh, well, I'm sure. You're assuming he lives that long? That's
wow. And here, I was going to say, you wouldn't believe when he gets to 311s.
Yeah, exactly.
Spoiler! Oh my God, Mike, this podcast is going to be huge.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It kind of is. Danielle, what is your favorite part about doing this so far?
I am the only person other than Terrell that knows the story to the end.
Okay.
And so I have a unique reading of things because, I mean, I read the comic like everybody else. When a new page comes up, I go in and I take a look because the way Terrell tells me the story, I see it in my head, and then I look at the computer and I see it on screen with, you know, all the movements and camera angles and then all the colors and stuff. And I used to color before Cheyenne. And so it would be really interesting because I would get to sort of see it as it progressed. And now, because Cheyenne's doing the coloring, I read it like everybody else. And it's fascinating because I have understandings of what came before and what's coming ahead while I'm reading every page. And it's a fascinating perspective. So, yeah.
So she likes being God.
Well, it's like a spectator of God, though. It's not really.
So you're Le Metatron. Alan Rickman would be proud.
Yeah, I get to see it all as it goes, but I don't actually influence it.
Ha.
Cool. All right. So there are good. I almost called it gremlins. Wow. There are good good goblins and bad goblins, correct?
Well, nuance. They're all nuance, which is what's great.
Okay.
Yeah, the whole concept, I mean, like, the concept behind the story is it's how, like, every demographic sees the other demographic as evil. Like, the goblins are, like, saying that the adventurers are evil because they come in and they wipe us out for XP and they steal our little weapons and stuff from the chest and they move on. So we have to fight back. And then we see, like, you know, the adventurers, they're like, well, no, these goblins are evil because they're monsters. You know, yeah, because, I mean, some of them are, that we're going to take over the world. We're going to, like, do this horrible ritual thing. And everybody sees everybody else as, you know, as bad in some way. And it sort of, like, lays out, I hope in a discreet way, like, the how, like, nasty bigotry can be and how you can get swept up in this kind of prejudicial thinking.
Well, one of my favorite turns in Goblins, and spoilers for those of you who have not read this page 7 years ago, there's this whole portion where they go to Brass Moon City, and there's a ranger in that, and one of the things in fantasy RPGs is that you can, the ranger class usually can specify a race that it has bonuses against within the construct of the game, and it was so fun because Terrell deconstructed that and went, why does that class have that ability to know all of the weaknesses of an individual monster? And he basically made this ranger, who's the good guy, he has a basement full of monsters that he experiments on, and that's why he knows what their weaknesses are. And it's hideous. And it's great because it just takes this thing that you take for granted as a fantasy RPG player, and it just sort of, you know, it pulls back the covering on a little bit and goes, yeah, you know what, let's look at that from not the most positive point of view and see what it looks like. And it's a beautiful sequence.
The whole series, I mean, just from the little video that's online for the Indiegogo, it looks like it's going to be a really fun series. And I have never, like, I think in the 4 years I've been reading comics in general on the regular because I do a comic book podcast, I think I've read two different web comics. Like comics in general, as a kid, I was more cartoon, movie, whatever.
Right.
And you guys will have to send me the link to the website so I can put it in the post and start checking it out, because it sounds like something that's really, really interesting.
It's fantastic.
Absolutely. It's not that good. Oh, stop it.
As you saw from the animatic,
yeah,
what it promises for potential in animation is so cool, just because, yeah, you know, we can, obviously you can't just port everything over, you know, from one medium to another, otherwise then you're Robert Rodriguez doing Sin City. And it's like, yeah, no matter how cinematic a comic book is, it's still not a movie.
Right. You know?
So, I mean, we're going to adapt.
I would say even Ang Lee's Hulk, you know, where he was doing the
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Hulk. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, that was just shades away from Joel Schumacher.
Wow. Wow.
You leave Batman Forever alone, I will fight you to the death on that one, Phil.
Oh no, you'd be dead. You'd be dead the minute you started. Because
Batman Forever was not that bad. Batman and Robin, yes. Batman Forever, not that bad.
Well, all right. It killed the franchise.
Wait, Batman and Robin killed the franchise.
That's the Batman Forever's the George Clooney one, right?
No, that's Batman and Robin. Batman Forever was Val Kilmer, Tommy Lee Jones, Jim Carrey.
Oh, the one without the skates.
Yes.
It's still,
you know, that's the one with the nipple armor, right?
No, that's Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin is ice to meet you.
Mike, you're the only person left in the world who knows the distinction between the two.
Yeah.
The only reason why is because I've been in love with Dr. Chase Meridian since I was 15.
Now the truth comes out.
Of course.
I'll always regret. I was once at a convention having a conversation with Miles Teves, who designed the Batman nipple armor. And he also did, you know, like he did like the Tim Curry demon from Legend.
Oh,
he did the Iron Man helmet. Like he did lots of amazing things. And I'm talking to him about this stuff, and I'm thinking to myself, Terrell, ask him about the Batman nipple armor. Just do it. Come on. Get the Kurt. Ask him. Say, what was the deal with the nipples on the armor? And I was just like, oh, I can't do it. And so I'll forever, for the rest of my life, regret having that opportunity and not asking him about the nipple armor.
Should've. Always ask.
Always ask.
Always ask about nipples, no matter who you're talking to. That's the lesson I learned.
Okay, Matt Lauer.
Wow. All right. This turned dark fast. And now, Danielle, can you bring us back into the light?
Well, she's the darkest of us all.
Yeah.
I love you, but no. so let's distract ourselves by going back to the animation that we're doing.
Yes, absolutely.
Seeing the goblins move in the animatic for the first time was fascinating, because as much motion as you see on the page and as much as you imagine in your head, it's not the same as seeing the characters move under their own power, so to speak. Like, it's quite neat. And hearing voices out loud when you've just been imagining those in your head the whole time too, it's a really interesting shift in perspective. So people keep asking me, well, how did you feel the first time you saw them move and hear them speak? And, well, it's amazing, because you think you know them and you think they're yours, and then somebody else makes them move and somebody else makes them have a voice, and all of a sudden they're not yours anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
That's interesting. That's because I find that's one of the really interesting things about animation itself, is you don't have the kind of ownership that you have in a lot of other mediums. You know, as a novelist, as a comic book, you know, creator, as an actor, you know, like if you're a live action actor, it's your face on that character, even though it's not your words, not your costume, whatever. But animation is so collaborative. You know, yeah, Terrell created this character, he created this design, but then Billy speaks it, And then, you know, the, you know, other, you know, the animators who are involved in the movement, because the acting is all of it. It's what he's saying, how he's saying it, and how he looks while he's saying it. Like, I always find that, you know, even though I feel invested in a character, they're never really mine, you know, because I'm, every moment is built along with the other people collaborating on it.
It feels a lot like, Daniel and I were talking about this. It feels like Goblins has been my baby, and like it's lived in my house, and it was just interacting with me, and now it's grown up and moved out there, and it's got all these relationships with other people, and it's you know, it's still kind of my kid, but now it's got this entire life all its own, and it's doing things not just influenced by me anymore. It's kind of neat.
Fascinating.
Absolutely, because that's what you do when you are a creator of anything. You know, you put it out there and you let people look at it or watch it or read it or listen to it or whatever, and they add to it, or some people.
Nope, not me.
Some people.
I refuse. Once we make Goblins Animated, I will lock it in a vault until I die.
Oh boy, that means he's gonna lock it in that chest from the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. Everybody.
That was another disappointment.
It weren't.
I remember when 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo came out when I was a kid. I know it's off topic, but I was so excited because I was like, here's a finite story. They have to capture the 13 ghosts. What's going to happen when they capture all 13? And I watched that show. It was my favorite show until I realized they're never going to catch all 13 ghosts. And there's not just 13. It's just, it was once again, I was let down by the formulaic episodic, like, toy commercials, which is what they were.
Well, you know, the one good thing I'll give 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo is Vincent Van Gogh, I should say. I mean, come on, it doesn't get much better than that.
Oh my god.
Like, I see that. Is your title officially 90s apologist?
No. It's 80s apologist. Get
80s,
it right.
I'm sorry.
So, and I did not say 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo was good. I said the only good thing about it was Vincent Van Gogh as Vincent Van Gogh.
Vincent Van Gogh is pretty badass.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that's one of the, like, I remember in the 90s when the comic book Spawn came out, and that, like, blew everything out of the water. It became, for a while, the best-selling comic book in the world. Like, it beat out Spider-Man, Superman, all that. And I think part of the reason for that was I mean, there's a bunch of reasons, but I think one of those the bigger reasons is every time he used his power, there was a little counter on the corner of the panel that would show he has this, like, it was a number, he has this much power left, and after he uses it all up, it's gone forever. So he could do these amazing things, and it was like, wow, look, like, he's really OP. But at the same time, look how much of his power he just used. And so it had this feeling of, it's a countdown, it's this finite thing. And I think people really like that. I know I did. Like, I liked the fact that it gave you a sense of, I have to see what happens, because this is counting down. This is going badly. Like, it doesn't feel like it's just going to keep going, you know, forever the same way. And I think that's an important part of storytelling, is that it's got this feeling of it's happening. You know, like, it's going somewhere. Something's going to happen.
There was consequence all of a sudden. Yeah.
Yeah, because once you add consequence, then the real stuff begins.
Right.
Absolutely. All right. What can the listeners do besides, obviously, donating to the Indiegogo? Like, how often should we share? How often? Obviously, it's, you know, share at least once, two, three times, 3 million times a day. But, like, how can people get involved with this besides the donation thing, as far as getting the word out there for everybody?
Well, I would say, the first thing, obviously, is donate to the campaign. It doesn't cost very much. It's a $5 thing you can give. You the $15 thing, and you can get access to all the episodes. So it's not much, and it really does help real art and new material. Wow, weird. Actually come out into the world. But if you can't, absolutely like, share, send, tell everybody that you can about it. There's a geek you know in your life who is interested in comics and interested in animation, and we need all the help we can get, and also advice. If you've got, you know, I just said to our backers, because we got 900 backers now, telling us, like, here's a good idea that you guys may not have thought of. Have you gone and talked to these people, or have you gone and done this? That's really useful to us, because, you know, there are only four of us, and helping us out with your ideas definitely can help us move the ball and can help Goblins Animated come to life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, starting discussions about it online. Like, there's a we've got a forum, goblinsforum.com, and where they talk about the comic and they talk about the animated project and they talk about whatever else geeky thing they're doing in their lives. But like, if you want to go to talk to people who already know about it, if you don't know about it yet, go there, go hang out. They're friendly. They've actually invited people. They said, you know, come and talk to us. Come and engage in conversation about this stuff, and. Like, and then like on Reddit or wherever else you hang out online, start conversations about either the project or the comic, and just share it that way by engaging with other people.
Most importantly, ask about the Batman nipple armor. That's very important.
maybe not every time.
Yeah, not all the time, no. And I mean, come on, it was Clooney. Who really wants to know what the hell happened in those nipples?
We can definitively say there will be no Batman nipple armor in the animated project.
There you go.
Have you seen the Batman the animated series take on that, right? It was one of the most brilliant things that I've ever seen. I mean, Dini is amazing anyway, but yeah. they had this thing where they basically had three kids talking about whether or not.
Yes, I remember that episode, yeah.
And two, what he was actually like. And so the first kid says, this is what Batman's like. And it straight goes into, like, straight out 1960s, hands on hips, you know, boof, bang, pow, Batman. And then the next one comes out and he says, no, it's this, and it goes in a Golden Age Batman. And it's fantastic. And then the next one comes out and he goes and talks about it, and it's straight out Alan Moore, you know.
Oh, really?
Dark Knight Returns.
That was Frank Miller.
Dark Knight Returns Batman. And then it goes, then they walk down the street, and these little kids pass another little kid, and he's got a pink feather boa. And they go, and he says, I know what Batman's really like. And they say, what? Well, he's got a Batman uniform, and it's got nipples on it, and the Batmobile can pull up walls and everything. And all three kids look at him and go, whatever, Joel.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah,
the Paul Dini Batman was that's an example of fantastic storytelling. It was always so good,
so iconic.
Absolutely. All right. So, where can people? Danielle had mentioned the forum, but what is the actual website to go to? Is it just goblinsanimated.com or what's the website?
That's our website, goblinsanimated.com, for the Indiegogo, where you can find all the news as it's print. You can go to IGG, like Indiegogo, IGG.me/@goblinsanimated. And that'll get you straight to our URL, and you'll be able to help us out.
Yeah, right to the campaign page.
Very cool. And I will have the campaign page and the website and all that stuff in the interview post as well. So,
great,
absolutely. Anything else? Really quickly before we get out of here, mm-hmm. What I was going to bring up earlier, Terrell, when you were writing these characters and you guys were getting ready to look for the voice cast, did you hear a specific voice actor in your head for each character? Like, how did the voice cast come about?
For the most part, I never really pictured voices in, like, I don't know. It's weird. Like, I guess I was picturing my own voice. but some of them, like, for some reason, the one goblin's big ears, I pictured him with this sort of softer, lower voice, like, so Matt Mercer, when I found out Matt Mercer would be voicing him, I thought, that's so absolutely perfect. Some of them, Billy West for Min-Max and like, you know, Phil for Complaints of Names, they've taken it and they've made it their own in a way that I didn't picture. So at first it was like, oh wow, like that's a different take than what I've pictured. But at this point now, like when I write the comic, now I hear their voices. I hear like Complaints of Names as Phil, and now it seems odd to picture them as any other way. Like I was surprised at how fast their voices became the definitive voices for the characters in my head. So I didn't really picture them with specific voices for the most part before, but now I definitely do. Like Min-Max sounds like Billy West and such.
That's so funny. Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah. Finding the voices in the first place was a really organic process. It was, well, I'm Matt, I'm a voice actor, I know these people. I'm Phil, I know these people. And we would talk about them and we're like, can we get that person? And they're like, well, I'll just ask them. Like, it's, you can just do that with voice actors. This is their job. And if you ask them to do a thing, they will do a thing. And so it was
pay them. That's it.
Yeah. It was not the normal casting process. It was basically, you know, since Matt and I are voice actors, and you know, we basically are just sort of, you know, since we're creating this, we're not doing it, that part of it, the normal way. We're just like, we're creating something. We have a chance to hire our friends, people we know are amazingly talented, who we love working with. Let's do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Very cool. Very cool. Was there a specific voice actor that you were surprised said yes?
Oh, well, for Terrell and myself, absolutely. Yeah, every single person who said yes were like, seriously? Oh my, really? Wow. Every single one.
Yeah, I remember, we've been talking about this for, I don't know how long, it's like we've been working on this for like a year and a half or something crazy like that. And I remember thinking, like, okay, so we might be able to get these people. And I remember thinking, okay, great, or saying, okay, great, but thinking, this isn't going to happen. And then they're like, okay, I'm pretty sure we've got these, like, this lineup of amazing people. And I said, that's great. And I'm thinking, this isn't going to happen. And then they said, okay, so we've got these people, like, they're in, we've got them. And I remember thinking, holy crap, all those famous people, they're going to be so mad at me when this doesn't happen. But yeah.
No.
Wow. All right. So as of
I love that Phil sees the world that way. It's like, actors are mad because they didn't get a job.
That's Chris Rock's point of view.
we're happy to be wanted, Daryl.
Exactly.
Aww. Absolutely. As of this moment, the campaign has reached 34% of the $248,000 goal.
Yes.
So please, folks, go check this out. Go look at the animatic video. Go read the descriptions. Look at the characters. Look at the voice actors. All that stuff. Look at the tiers that you can donate for. What's so cool about it, I'm pretty sure Kickstarter does this, but I don't know. But Indiegogo, like, every higher tier, you automatically get the previous tier.
Oh yeah,
package included.
Yeah, this is structured differently, but the thing with this one is you can get different ones. So if you see something in one, you know, one a perk on one level that you want, and then you see a perk on another level, you can get both of them.
Both.
Like with that's the benefit of Indiegogo.
Very cool, very cool. So as they were saying earlier, folks, you can pay as little as $5 and as high as like
$2,000.
You know, you can pay whatever you want.
Yeah.
If you want a replica axe of Prazan, you can pay $10,000. Yeah. There's a couple of those going out in the world.
People actually did that. They're like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, and
I want one of those so badly, though.
Tony Stratton, who did all of the swords for Pirates of the Caribbean and for
Warcraft.
Warcraft, and what else did he do? He did all the swords for Last Samurai. This is amazing swordsmith. and he's making the axe for us. So
very cool.
Quite cool.
All right, one last thing, and I don't know if this is possible, because like I said, I have not read the comics. You guys can let me know. Matt and Phil, can your characters have a conversation really quickly?
Phil, I think Goblins Animated is the best in the entire world. Don't you think everyone should do it?
Fumbles, why are you calling me Phil?
Phil!
Have you forgotten my name?
It was on the paper in front of me, and I was just looking at it, and I rolled a one. I'm sorry. It happens every single time.
This campaign is the best thing ever. Let's go!
Send your bumble kickasso!
Oh my god, that was hilarious.
That was supposed to be in character.
What have I done?
You've created a monster!
Several.
Several, yes, several. All right, folks, as I said, you can catch Goblins Animated on the website and on the Indiegogo page. All the links will be in our episode post for this interview. Matt, where can the people interact with you online? Twitter, wherever you want to.
Twitter, at Mad King. You can also check me out on mattyangking.com or find us on goblinsanimated.com and check out. Again, our Goblins Indiegogo at igg.me/@goblinsanimated.
Cool. What about you, Terrell?
I'm on Twitter. It's at @thunt_goblins, so thunt_goblins. That's it. If you just sort of want to like poke your nose in and see what the comic is like, you can scroll through my Twitter feed, and every day we're posting what we're calling Goblins Moments, and it's just basically like little snippets, like a half a page or so of the comic, to just, it's designed to let you know this is kind of what to expect from it. So if you want to just go there and scroll down, you can take a quick look at them. And those are also on the Instagram, aren't they, guys?
Yeah, they're popping up every day.
Cool. What about you, Danielle?
I'm on Twitter as @DragonTurtle, creatures as they sound. And I hang out in the Goblins Forum as well. So if you want to have little short conversations with me, find me on Twitter. And if you want to have longer ones, find me on the forum.
Cool. Awesome. And, you know, Mr. Illustrious over there, we all know what his Twitter is.
at Phil Amar, 2 L's in the middle, 2 R's on the end. And,
yep, absolutely.
And PhilAmar.com and on Instagram at Goblins Animated.
Absolutely. So check out Goblins Animated, folks. And once this thing gets funded, we'll probably have these guys back on to talk about the fact that it got funded and that it is coming. So, yeah. Absolutely. So I will ask them to hold the line. And for all you other listeners, thank you for checking this out. Unleash the Geek in You, and we will catch you next time here on GeekCast Radio Presents.
Hi, I'm Matt King.
And I'm Phil Lamar.
And we're here creating Goblins Animated, a cartoon based on the popular webcomic Goblins by Terrell Hunt.
We need your help to create a 5-minute mega trailer, sort of.
Huge.
Yeah, a pilot presentation that we can show to producers, studios, whoever, so they can get a sense of what a Goblins Animated show would really look like.
I've been reading Goblins for 10 years, and I've fallen absolutely in love with the heart, the adventure, the violence, the wonder, and absolutely the feels. And I passed around to other people just because I love it so much.
Yeah, he hit me to it.
And you guys are going to love it just as much as we do. Terrell, why don't you tell them what it's all about?
Hi, I'm Terrell Hunt. I'm the creator of the webcomic Goblins. Goblins takes place in a fantasy role-playing game from the point of view of the monsters and how they have to deal with the attacking adventurers and heroes.
If we were to just show people the comic on the web or on paper, they wouldn't really get it. We want to be able to bring it to life, and we've got a really amazing set of actors to help us do that.
Why don't you check them out?
Hi, this is Billy West. And I'm going to be playing Min-Max in a new show, Goblins. Get behind it.
Real mature.
Hello out there, Jim Cummings here. And I play Thacko in Goblins. And accept no substitutes.
Are you sure this is a good idea?
Hello, Jennifer Hale.
and thank you for supporting Goblins, because it's awesome.
Hi, my name is Matthew Mercer. I'm a voice actor, and I play the role of Big Ears, and please help this ridiculous, amazing story come to fruition.
Hi, I'm Maurice LaMarche, and I'm going to be playing Forgath in Goblins.
I'm Steve Bloom. You may know me as Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop, Wolverine, or Zebarelios from Star Wars Rebels, and I'm going to be playing the main villain in Goblins.
Hi, I'm Tara Strong. And I'm super excited to be playing Save the Fox, so help us make Goblins come true.
Not only that, but I'm going to be playing Complains of Names.
That's a common pre-battle exclamation, you pinkish wall of flesh.
And I'm going to be playing Fumbles. Senor Vorpal Kinezo! So, please, we know you're going to love Goblins as much as we do. So, take a look at the page, pick a perk, and help us get this thing done.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your support.
Thank you for supporting Goblins.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.